I had 8 FDA inspections in my time period. And that makes it sound bad. It was not. We were contract manufacturers, so we had lots of different reasons that the FDA would show up. And we also had different branches of the FDA that would show up. And so one time an inspector showed up and asked for
investigator. We're supposed to call him investigator. Sorry, go ahead.
I don't know what we're supposed to call him anymore. Anyway, but she showed up and she asked for every record we had ever processed for a specific product.
Welcome to the Global Medical Device Podcast, where today's brightest minds in the medical device industry go to get their most useful and actionable insider knowledge direct from some of the world's leading medical device experts and companies.
Hey guys, if you're working on getting a medical device to market, dive into a world where innovation meets precision with Clio, C-L-E-I-O. Here, we're not just an engineering medical device firm, we're crafting the future of healthcare. Our seasoned team blends strategy, design, and engineering to turn complex challenges into elegant, life-changing solutions. With a laser focus on quality and compliance, they plan to navigate the journey from idea to impact. Experience the Clio difference, where your vision is transformed into reality, making a profound difference in lives around the globe. Discover how at Clio.com, C-L-E-I-O.com.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Global Medical Device Podcast. My name is Etienne Nichols. With me today is Sarah Adams, one of my favorite guests, and I'm glad that you're a recurring guest, Sarah. I told Sarah I wouldn't go into podcast mode, so we're going to just make this conversational.
No podcast mode. Okay. I'm doing good. Somehow Etienne surprises me and talks me into doing these things. And then we always end up having a good time and it ends up being fun. So,
yeah, I mean, we always get good feedback on your episodes, Sarah. You probably do my job better than I do.
I disagree.
So the topic today, just so everybody knows who's out there waiting on pins and needles, as she made me wait on pins and needles when we were talking about this, was quality management system. What is a QMS? And people are probably thinking, what in the world? We know what a QMS is. Well, there's a miscommunication in the industry about what a QMS actually is. So I saw a post on LinkedIn talking about how you can't buy a QMS off the shelf or an out-of-the-box QMS. And to a certain extent, I agree. But the disconnect I feel like we're getting in the industry is, what is a QMS? Is a QMS the words on the pages of your SOPs that describe your approach to quality? If so, you can't buy that. But the other one is a QMS the place where you store your SOPs, and that place being tailored to FDA Part 8, Part 11, maintains the traceability and maintains the change control requirements and so forth. So what is a QMS? And Sarah, who I don't know anyone who's better suited to talk about quality management systems than Sarah, because she deals with hundreds of different quality management systems and has, I don't know how many hundreds of audits and inspections you've gone through. So Sarah, why don't you tell us what you think?
It's definitely a lot of audits and inspections. I don't know the exact number on that. Well, first of all, you stole it, because I define a QMS as a quality management system, because that's what it is, right? And I think deeper than that, or deeper than like, which one is it? Where does it land? I think it's all those things. And I know that's kind of like a willy-nilly, it depends answer. But what I mean by that is, it is the words on the page, and it is how you choose to interpret the regulation and what is applicable to you and what is not applicable to you. And it is also where you store that and how you make sure that your quality, and again, getting in the definitions, how you make sure you're meeting those regulations in procedural form, and where you're housing those, and how you are, like, a part of your process is how you're approving pieces of that quality management system. And so I think it's all of those things, and they all kind of go together, right?
I disagreed with you yesterday when we were discussing this episode, and I think it's the way our brains think.
I don't think
it's a disagreement on the actual thing. So like, when I look, what is a person? Is it their respiratory system? Is it their skeletal system?
No, it's the whole thing, right?
I get that it's all of it. So you have an illustration that you wanted to use. So why don't we just dive into that? Because I think it's a good one.
Okay, I'm glad you think it's a good one.
Before we get into it, part of the reason this matters to me is in the industry, there are people out there who are starting medical device companies. First, let's define the problem, right? There's people who have these medical device companies and they want to build a quality management system. And so—
Oh, wait, I'm going to interrupt you because I don't know that they all want to build a quality management system. But like, I hear that they want to do this the right way. They want to get from the get-go, start things off and have, right? Follow the rules, if you will.
Right? They recognize the necessity of
building
a quality management system. So they've recognized this necessity and they're starting down this road. And so they're thinking, okay, do I purchase an EQMS? Do I borrow a friend of mine's SOP template who used to work at Medtronic? Or do I just hire someone to do all this for me? Or what's the process? And some you can buy, some you have. You can't just get away with paying for everything. Okay, let's jump into your example though.
Yeah, I think like, and all, I'm going to get the example. I'm glad you think it's a good example. I also expect like bazillions of comments and LinkedIn messages because I think people are either going to love this example or they're going to hate it. It's going to resonate or it's not going to.
That's fine.
Like, I think there's this, I meet lots and lots of med device startup customers. I meet lots and lots of ones that are at post-market. They are, have things on the market already, right? And I think by and large, for those who set out to, like you said, like they're going to do this the right way. They know that they need this. They recognize that they need to have a quality management system in place. There's some that think like, oh, easy, check the box. And I it's not that easy, right? And I think that's why the analogy is beautiful. So I know it is 2024. So for people who are listening to this, I realized that in 2020, the world shut down about this time, right? And the world started diving into sourdough bread. I did not. I worked in manufacturing. I still went to work. I had two children at home who I was having to teach because schools were closed and our school continued. They go to a school where we were the teachers at that point. They're young, but that's what we did. I had a kindergartner. And so I missed the sourdough craze. That said, I need a hobby. And so we had dinner with a friend who is super into sourdough. And I just mentioned casually that I thought it would be fun to dive into sourdough. And so for about the last month, I have participated in this thing that the world participated in 4 years ago. Sorry, I'm late to the party. But
hey, you know, maybe that's like a good metaphor for medical device companies. We tend to be about 4 years late
to the party. No joke. Or it takes us 4 years to put something in place. Right. Or 12 if we're talking QMSR. Anyway, or longer. Anyway, the point here of what I'm saying is I was thinking about this podcast episode before we did it and like, what are we going to do? Well, to be fair, I was turning out my sourdough bread so that it could sit in the oven. And like, oddly enough, my internet went down upstairs. So I've relocated to my kitchen. You can kind of see my oven there. So it's kind of funny that I'm sitting here with this example. But my friend gave me some sourdough starter. She literally imparted that to me at her house about a month ago.
Wow.
And so I'm thinking about this in a QMS from a QMS standpoint or, you know, that from that standpoint. And I could have brought that QMS starter. That's literally what I just said out loud. Sorry, I could have brought that sourdough starter home and I could have just poured it in a loaf pan and put it in the oven. But anyone would tell you that's not how it works, right? You don't get to just dump it in. Somebody else has done the work and I put it in the oven. So if I'm likening this to a medical device context and a QMS context specifically, sometimes I meet people, customers who have purchased templates from a consultant, from us, from their next door neighbor who used to work at Medtronic. I don't know. I'm giving your example back to you, Etienne, but I meet them and they have this expectation that like, okay, yeah, here it is, done. Sourdough starter, right? I can put this in the oven and it's good to go. And that's not what happens, right? There's this piece of every device is uniquely different. Just like I can make sourdough bread or I can make a loaf or I can make cinnamon rolls or pizza dough, right? With my starter. Every device is different. And yes, there are a set of things that we need to do, but every company is potentially going to have exclusions, non-applications. I live in Memphis. I have a friend who works in the baby space. She's a creator in that space. And she has a medical device or wanted to go down this avenue, very low, class one. There's a specific part of the CFR for her, right? And so I mentioned that because her QMS, her procedures, her documents are not going to look the same as someone who's building a class three. Man, this is the newest thing on the market. Nobody's ever done this before, right? There's going to be some exclusions that she's able to claim. Going back to my sourdough, and I've like, sorry, Eddie, and I'm going to keep going until you interrupt me. But going back to my sourdough starter, I have to take that and I have to feed it. And there's all these different methods on that. Etienne's not going to feed his sourdough the same way I'm going to feed my sourdough. We are going to then take some of that and put in different ingredients. I made this joke when I was telling Etienne this story, but I like coconut oil in some of my recipes. I don't want to use vegetable oil. I'm trying to make this a little bit healthier. We use honey instead of sugar, right? Things like that. I gave the example also, somebody's gluten-free. They need to roll this out with gluten-free flour instead of the other. You're getting your baking lesson today. You didn't know you were coming for that. But my point with all of that is there's different ingredients that go into that starter or different ingredients that go into a template that you're going to use, right? Where you're going to custom make that for you. That's the work, right? Of like, I want to do this the right way. I'm just going to buy a template package. I'm going to put this in place. And I'll be done, right? I'll just throw it in. Now that gets to my last point. I am going to then put that loaf of bread, cinnamon rolls, whatever I've made, in the oven behind me. The oven is like my EQMS or my network drive or where I'm housing this QMS, right? Or document storage if I'm on paper and I've got to keep that forever. My oven does different things. It does not saute unless someone can tell me and fill me in otherwise, right? Like it broils, it bakes, I don't know. It even proofs, I think. I don't use that button for my sourdough. But like all these different things that it does, kind of likening that to your QMS, where I'm going to take those procedures and I'm going to put them in a way, in a place that follows regulations from that standpoint. Right. And I'm going to house it here.
Yeah.
Go here to approve things.
So some of the things that I might liken that to is your retention policy or can it hold it for 2 years? So is it going to meet the Part 11 requirements, electronic signature and so forth?
Yeah. When you said that, this came to mind. I have someone that I was recently discussing their change order evaluation form. It's 5 pages long. And I said, my answer back was why? Like, why is it 5 pages long? If you're listening to this, I hope yours isn't 5 pages long. If it is, I have the same question for you. But again, that's like a great example. Record retention is a great example of you're going to custom build that to you. When you say, Sarah, how long should we store our documents or how long should our change order evaluation form be? My answer is always going to be, it depends. And then I'm going to follow it with like, I know you don't love that answer, but it depends because what are we trying to solve? Why are we doing this? Like, I know this is silly to put it in this example, but like for my product development friends, what's your user need? Why are you doing it this way, right? You didn't have to do it that way. Or maybe you did have to do it that way because of the nature of the device that you're using. But I think like this, there's a misconception that that all I have to do is have a document control procedure. And there's just lots of different ingredients that go into that. Or all I have to do is have a management review procedure. There's a lot of different ingredients that go into that that are going to be custom fit to your organization and to the regulation so that you are meeting the intent of what it is requiring that you do in a way that works for your company. If I had a dollar for every time I had to go in my previous company to the CEO or operations and say, we could do this, this, or this. I like this because it's like going to be the most robust. And you know what they heard? It's also going to be the most expensive. So they would pick number three. And that wasn't every time. So nobody like, they did, Price we did anchoring. A great job. Yeah. I'm not saying that they picked a bad solution, right? I'm saying you gave them choices and they said, this is going to be the best one for us. And so I think like we're, QMSs get a bad rap is twofold. Misconception. I think it's just going to be this throw the sourdough starter in the oven with no like extra attention or care. Or I'm going to like, we have to have all these things and it has to be a 5-page evaluation.
I love that example really, because I mean, just to torture the metaphor a little bit.
Yeah.
So let's say you buy your oven. In my past, so I've slept outside, I've camped. You know, and I've cooked bacon over an open fire.
Look,
I've never
there
cooked
it is.
Bread. That's beautiful. It's the
right
top and the bottom.
Me. I
oh, man.
Planned that. Like I didn't even plan to come downstairs and do this for my kitchen. So here we are. All right.
But if you kind of, like I said, torture that metaphor, I mean, maybe I buy that sourdough starter and I'm going to go over an open campfire. I could probably make bread over an open campfire. I could
maybe, buy, except it depends on if it's cold or hot outside, right? Okay, keep going.
There's lots of things. So then you've got the standard oven. But then, you know, that, so I was skiing and a friend of mine, his family owns it's like a $10 million condo in Beaver Creek. And I'm one of the breakfast guys. So there's like 13 guys. We go skiing and I'll make breakfast for everybody. I love that kitchen because there's there's an oven, you know, bigger than, you know, my wingspan. And you could cook all kinds of stuff in there. It's so fun. And to take that back to your illustration, you know, I've worked in paper. I've worked in SharePoint where we struggle with the Part 11 side. I've worked in as high as, you know, Agile, Oracle, SAP, and so forth. And what does a medical device company need? You know, is it that starter dough, you buy those templates and then you throw it in some oven where you think that's all you need to do. But between buying the starter dough, buying the oven, there's a certain amount of work a medical device company has to do that's specific to that company.
Yeah, I think so I've worked across the board too. I have one example where we started in paper and we moved into an EQMS. And I think there are trade-offs. Can you do paper? Sure. It also comes with frustrations. It comes with coffee stains. I always give that example. Like I was notorious for spilling coffee on my document that I was supposed to be approving. I can't tell you how many times I had to hunt down documents. Like, where is this? I gave it to Etienne and he
got some stories.
Etienne and I didn't work together, but you know what I mean? Like
if we might not be doing this episode.
You know, I put post-it notes on documents to say, please, after you sign this, return to Sarah Adams' desk. Post-it notes are like an expletive in a quality engineer's world, right? We don't use post-it notes except when we're trying to hunt down documents. And so do you have to have an EQMS? No. Could do it on paper. SharePoint, we can come back to that one because, you know, Eddie and I had some disagreements on this one yesterday. But then we go into a Part 11 compliant solution, some of the ones that you named, Greenlight, anything like that. I think there's a trade-off for efficiency, right? Like I can do paper. It's going to be cheaper. But is it? Because I got to pay for all the paper. And also I can do electronic and it's going to make it faster. But there's going to be a cost associated with that too. But at some point there's a break even, right? And I've told this story. We had about 40 people when I first started, we grew to 400 people. And so there just comes a point where it's that oven, what that oven is matters. Right. And so
if you need a bread
for process,
that's so big. Yeah.
Yeah. Like the campfire site, or you need this one, right? If I'm going to start baking bread professionally, which I'm not, don't start that rumor, but I'm going to need more than this, right? Going back to SharePoint, and I'll just touch on that briefly. I meet a lot of people who have been using SharePoint and they show me their signatures, right? How are you approving that in SharePoint? Well, we just sign off on it. Okay. But what does that look like? Because you're spread out all over the country and they will. I've seen everything. And I've seen documents where people have a picture of their signature and they drag and drop that into the document so that it shows. And I can get in a really big argument about that's not Part 11 compliant. That is not a signature. Ask me about the time that my floor operators decided they would print their batch record, sign their name for the portion they're doing, and then make photocopies of it because that was faster. So no big deal.
And so what would be wrong with that in an audit or an inspection?
Ooh, well, if you're sneaky, what I mean by that is if you only bring copies into the room, an auditor might not figure that out, right? That transparently, if I'm showing you a copy of a copy, they don't know that it's not an original signature unless it looks like a picture, right? Unless it looks like that. In the other, if I was asked to produce a record with your signature on it, and all I can produce is a photocopy of your signature, that's not a signature, right? Like part of GMP, we are signing for the work we are doing. Your signature is saying, I agree with this, I did this, whatever I'm signing off on is that work. And it has to do with adulterated signatures. I could sign somebody else's initials, right? Or you're photocopying your initials kind of thing. So going back to the SharePoint file,
auditor could dig. One other thing there. So there's three situations that we're thinking about when we're talking about adulterated signatures or doing things the right way. There's, can I get away with it? There's always going to be those companies that say, can I slip this past an auditor? If you're in that camp, you're probably not listening to this podcast, but
I was just thinking that, like, that's not me.
But let's assume you are. So you've slipped past, and maybe you have, if you apply that same level of thinking to your product, there's a potential that you could have something bad on the market. And if you do, you have the potential for a product liability case, which is different than failing an audit. So now,
for sure,
those lawyers who are going to look at those signatures, there's some things there. So
there's big implications.
Not being a lawyer, but yeah.
Yeah, that are deeper than even just an audit from that respect. I'll
throw out the third thing because all of these are very self-centered. You know, I want to slip past an audit. Okay, so that's you worrying about yourself, trying to get something out there. You're worried about a product liability case. You're worried about your internal company. The third one is what we should be thinking about is what if we have patient, this kind of mentality, right? the patient.
The patient.
Anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Sorry.
No, I interrupted you with the patient. I knew that's what you were going to say, right? Like, I tell everybody the patient is literally the person that you should be thinking about the entire time. And if you have to put your family, friend, loved one, whoever that is, in that picture, then do it. Like, if you have to do that to do the right thing, then do it. I also, as you know, I'm super black and white. Things are color coded. I like order. I'm a very good quality engineer, if I just described you. And I think that, like, for me, there's a reason that we do the right choice. We're not that first camp, right? But at the same time, like, thinking about the patient and what our choices, I told somebody this the other day, we're not making oven mitts. We're not making sourdough bread, right? We're making things that affect people's life in a good way or a bad way if we don't do the right thing.
Yeah.
I was going to say, back on the signature note, just to add to that, I had 8 FDA inspections in my time period. And that makes it sound bad. It was not. We were a contract manufacturer, so we had lots of different reasons that the FDA would show up. And we also had different branches of the FDA that would show up. And so one time, an inspector showed up and asked for every...
Investigator. We're supposed to call him investigator. Sorry, go ahead.
I don't know what we're supposed to call him anymore. Anyway, but she showed up and she asked for every record we had ever processed for a specific product. We had to call the, I won't say their name, like but the supplier who stored all the records that we used, right? And have pallets delivered. And I know this is crazy, but she did go through many of them. We also had another inspector that looked through she was going to stay until every record was looked through, investigator, whatever the right word is, for every record. Wow. And so in that case, like, she didn't want to see copies. We had to bring in real records. And yeah, I just think that could put you in a really bad place. I know we're talking deeper than that, but initially in a really bad place with an auditor.
Well, you know, we're talking about, sometimes I talk to people who are on paper, and like you said, maybe they can pull off that campfire approach for a while. As a mechanical engineer, you know, I was just on the cusp of having to learn to use a drafting board. I did learn a little bit. So if I really try hard, I can have good handwriting with the block letters and so forth. But I have used handwritten drawings and mocked up some different things. Wow, it's been a long time. But I also learned SolidWorks. And I tell you, those old school engineers, they were awesome the way they could handle paper and, you know, the massive drawings. But no engineer worth his salt today is going to go back.
No.
That I know of.
I will echo that. So I thought you were going to go somewhere different. We'll have that on a different podcast about mechanical engineers. Etienne knows this, but my husband is a mechanical engineer. And so it's always funny to me. I have a biomedical engineering degree. And I would say this about biomedical. We learned just enough in all the different areas. So what I mean by that is, like, we did SolidWorks for a minute. And we did. I actually took a drafting course as an elective because my mom has a civil engineering degree, and I thought that sounded fun. And so I did the block letters and all that stuff too. But it was just like dabble, like just enough to like get your hands wet, and then you could appreciate the finer things and other things in life too. But I think that's a great example of kind of like you understand. I don't know. I'm going back to the example to Etienne, and this may be over some people's, like, people may not feel this the way I do, but it's almost like that example of, like, the calculus teacher made you learn how to get the derivative the very, very long way. And then I remember being so angry when I went back in a senior in high school, and the next day she showed me, like, yeah, X squared. You just move the two down in front. It's 2X. And it was like, what? You made me do all this other stuff. I think like, and that feels like paper versus an EQMS to me, right? Like of like, yeah, sure. You can sit there and prove the limit. I don't know. I'm going way deep in. This is probably the first time I've used calculus in a very long time. But like that example sticks out for yes. it as well.
Yes, absolutely. Well. Oh man. No, that's really good. Okay. So we've got the, I hope this makes sense. I hope this helps people because to your point, let's go back to the original. Can you buy
original question.
A QMS out of the box?
I don't remember what I told you yesterday. No, yes, no. It depends.
The answer
is, you can buy an oven, but you cannot buy a finished set of procedures without input from your company. And maybe that's a consultant who can help you, but they're still asking you questions about your company so that you can meet the regulations that you're required to meet. How would you say that?
I think you're right. I think there are portions that you can buy. If you look at a QMS,
yeah, for sure.
Let's say a cutting edge MedTech specific QMS that's up to date, state of the art. Using that state of the art term, not meaning the absolute newest thing out there, but state of the art, the standard, what you would expect from a medical device company. There are portions that you might not be able to that you won't be able to buy, but there are portions you can. So, like you said, the oven, but you're going to have to put that input in. What's the temperature? How long do you want it to bake? All those different
the ingredient
that would be all those who needs to approve your design and design controls documentation, the planning, and so forth. Yeah.
And I think like there are like Greenlight is custom built for the med device space. And so there are things we refer to them as, and customers refer to them as guardrails. Like I need this because the standard says I need that. So some of that is pre-built into the EQMS. Like that's not pre-built into a SharePoint file, right? Can you still do it there? Yes. But it's not going to be those specific guardrails.
I can't tell you how many times when I was, you know, different places, whether it's looking at working with a company to see how they're handling things like, okay, is this the most current revision? Well, let me see, you know, and it's a little bit of dragging. I love that about Greenlight Guru, how you have the revision, you have the current, the newer, I'm messing up the terminology, the superseded and so on.
I'm going to add to in our paper-based system, I always joke with customers that come in that are paper-based and I ask them, do you have blue books on the floor? Some of them look at me like I'm crazy. And then some of them are like, yes, like really? Wow. I thought that was just us. Anyway, but the point being like, you've got to get, if you're in a manufacturing space, you've got to get those procedures to the people, even if they're on the SharePoint file. And so we would print those 4 versions and put them in the work cells, if you will. And then they use those to get their actual batch records, work instructions, whatever they were looking at in inspections, in notified body audits, and all of those things. The easiest finding for an auditor was to go check those books. Give me a master list with all the versions. Give me your blue book. That's what we called them, right? And let me find one. I'm a flip till I find one, right? Because people are people. And I think what you're trying to say is Greenlight provide, that's one of the values of an EQMS or like Greenlight, where you can't, like you're preventing that version, that superseded version of getting to the wrong place by controlling permissions, by Greenlight is doing that for you. And that comes directly from the standard, right? That's like prevent, I lost it when I came to the kitchen. It was right next to me upstairs, but prevent the misuse of those documents. That's a piece of that, making sure you've got the right versions accessible.
Yeah. And I love that you brought out how Greenlight Guru is specific to the medtech industry. I don't know if we're the only ones built specific for medtech anymore. We were the first.
I don't know.
Yeah. And the only for a long time. I should probably know this, but but anyway, yeah. Built on ISO 13145 and Part 820. Of course, there's that harmonization.
I was going to say that.
February, what is it? February 2nd, 2026.
And also, I was thinking about this too. Some of my customers know this because they've heard me laugh about it. I can't say it, Etienne. I do not know why these people named it the QMSR. That does not roll off my tongue. I can, you know how like ISO 1345, we flippantly say that. It's really funny to me when somebody says, ISO 134, like I don't know. You just have the way that you say it, right? And so for this, the QMSR is hard for me to say. Why we didn't call it, I think it's because it was the QSR. So why is it not the QSMR? Somebody's probably going to send me a message about that. I'll just accept it.
And I'm going to hear whatever messages you get. That QSR, I mean, I even hear people say, oh, QSR isn't the quality system regulation. It's the quality system record, you know, whatever.
Oops.
You know,
this,
but
QMSR. Anyway, it's we'll okay. Get there. I'm going to get there. QMSR. If I can just say QMS, which also is the subject of this entire podcast that we've been talking about, and then add an R to the end of it. That's how I'm reminding myself.
Maybe it's the QMS that's been pirated from 1345, and pirates like the word R. I don't know. Okay, we should probably stop.
Sarah, we should probably stop there.
Thank you so much. This has been really
fun. Of course.
For me personally.
They're always fun. I always get fearful they're not going to be, and then they're always like, well, that was fun. Let's do it again.
Yeah. So those of you who've been listening, you've been listening to the Global Medical Device Podcast. We hope this has been helpful in some way. Definitely flood Sarah's inbox on LinkedIn.
No, please don't.
Sarah, any last pieces of advice? Because I know you work with a lot of companies and you see a lot of things. Any last pieces of advice for the audience?
Today, what resonates as the last piece is to keep the patient in mind, that the decisions that you make affect something bigger than yourself and bigger than an auditor and bigger than an inspector. And I don't think anyone wants to put just the sourdough starter alone in the oven, right? That's not going to come out with a quality product that any user, I'm going to say my kids or whoever, enjoys. Deeper than that, we're not making sourdough. We're making medical devices that are life-saving and impact the quality, the value of life. And we need to resonate. We need to think about the patient as we build out and think about the why behind why we're building out these quality management systems.
Some point we'll have to talk about mechanical engineers versus biomedical.
We should.
We won't unpack that today. We'll need your husband on the episode. So
he will not come.
All right. We'll let you get back to it. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you all next time. Take care.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, can I ask a special favor from you? Can you leave us a review on iTunes? I know most of us have never done that before, but if you're listening on the phone, look at the iTunes app, scroll down to the bottom where it says leave a review. It's actually really easy. Same thing with the computer. Just look for that leave a review button. This helps others find us, and it lets us know how we're doing. Also, I'd personally love to hear from you on LinkedIn. Reach out to me. I read and respond to every message, because hearing your feedback is the only way I'm going to get better. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.